something. It depends on what I think their motivation is. And, mm-hmm.
and well, you can
if
see
I feel
the interest.
That somebody is really greedy, then I won't show them anything because I don't think of that as being a part of the culture.
But it would be the same way with your designs and stuff. Like a lot of people say, no, I don't want to show these people my designs because after a while when you sell, it starts to become more of a money profit thing.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than show your designs or show anybody anything, they back away from it. I started to get like that. And then after a while, since I've been doing the interviews, I started seeing it as a different way. Keep the culture going. You have
yeah,
to show.
That's right. You have to share.
You have to share.
But somebody shared with you somewhere along the line. That's the way I look at it.
I taught myself how to make sweetgrass baskets. I just looked at the basket and I studied it, how it was put together, and I held the sweetgrass and I twirled it around and I just kept doing that until I could see how it was put together, and I made a basket.
How I was taught to do that is you do one row and then you take the top row, the next row, and you put it at the edge from where you started, you put it over a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and you stitch half of it as you go along, and then you put another row and you stitch that half with the other half.
Oh.
And you just
oh,
keep
and it
going.
Builds.
Yeah.
We taught ourselves. Even.
Yeah, I
my
taught
first
myself.
One I made was beautiful. The next one.
Well, we really found the sweetgrass by just walking there and smelling it, eh? And so we had all the sweetgrass and none of us knew how to sew it. My cousin Luella was living next door, eh? So we all just sat there and tried to sew, eh? And we got it. And we were making sweetgrass making baskets that summer.
Yeah, well,
and
the
I won
first
a,
row, you just...
I won a prize at the homemakers convention on my basket.
Well, see, her grandma never ever said where that was. She must have.
But see, you know, that's a gift that was handed down to you. It could have been handed down to you as a child, and as you got older, little things are spurting out to you. You might not have remembered. It could have given to it could have been given to you at birth. Because a lot of the gifts that I've got was given to me a long time ago. Even my mom says, well, how can you remember these things? Your grandfather was dead when you were 2 years old, and you remember a house he lived in that you never seen, and he was already dead. How do you remember that house if he was
That's
already dead and you never lived? So it had to be handed down as I was coming.
Yeah.
You know?
That's like when I work with leather, that leather feels alive. I can feel life in that leather.
Well, that's because everything that you use has a spirit inside
mm-hmm.
of it. When the deer is killed, the spirit of the deer is still inside your hide, or the moose.
But very few white people feel that, but I feel.
So you wanted me to talk about my sweet grass?
Yeah, tell me, you know, everyone complains that they have trouble getting it, so.
Well, I have my own little patch that my grandmother planted for me, and I try to take good care of it, and I don't pull the plants out by the root. I cut the grass off, and that's really why I don't want to tell anyone where it is, because people will go and pull it by the root, and then it will go away. But if somebody did want sweet grass, I could get sweet grass for them.
Maybe you can tell us how you actually started making baskets right from the beginning. Why did you want to make the basket?
Well, my cousin was walking around in the back, and he smelt some sweetgrass there, so we went and looked for it, and we found it.
Yeah.
And so we picked it and brought it up to the house, and we ironed it with an iron to dry it out. And cured it. And we sat down and looked at a sweetgrass basket and tried to make one. And at first they were kind of wobbly and lumpy, but we just kept at it until we finally got it to how it was supposed to go together, and we started making sweet grass baskets. And that's how I started making sweet grass baskets.
What about the non-native community? Do you ever sell your work or display your work?
I did have a display at the powwow up here. There's a picture of it over there, and I did a sweetgrass demonstration. No, I've never really shown my work off the reserve.
Some Native people have said that they don't want their work going out of the Native community, and others have said that that's okay with them. Do you have any feeling?
Oh, it's all right. A lot of Native people, they don't want to buy the craft, but if a tourist were to buy it, they would be able to pay really what it's worth making it. So, and then they display it as an art form, and I don't really think there's anything wrong with that. Non-Indian people can perceive beauty just as well as a Native person can.
But I think a lot of the Native people worry about it being duplicated. This is what I think they feel is the baskets.
But
like any of their Native people.
But if there was a place like where I could take my stuff, say a shop in town or something, where I could take my stuff and they could sell it for me, well, that would be a lot better for me, because a lot of the non-Indian people won't come on to the reservation to buy something, even though they might want to buy it, maybe to take home with them to Europe or wherever they came to visit from.
I find a lot of white people are very interested in Native
crafts. What crafts did you see being done when you were young that you see are not being done now?
Splint baskets. Because there isn't really a lot of the black ash trees that are required to make the basket. There are a lot of little ones that can be found, but there's not a lot of the big ones that are required to make the splints. And it's really a hard job to they say that the sweet grass is the first plant that ever grew on the earth. That is the reason why we tend to it so tediously and care for it by braiding it. It's because that is the hair of the mother, which is the earth. No. And that scent is always there with it, and it's always inside of it, and when it's burnt, that scent is still there, and that represents the longevity of life and a continuation of the spirit. That's...
You were telling about a story that you had.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have.
You're being paged again.
I'm being
paged
again
either.
Halberner, I have some land up there, and I found some... Well, I could smell it, and smell it, and every time I went by the corner there and I looked around and I couldn't find it, but I know it's there somewhere. I looked all over for it, and I couldn't see it. But it really smells strong there.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe have
okay,
time
you,
to
your
tell
story.
One story anyway.
Have you copyrighted these?
No, they haven't been copyrighted yet.
Okay, well, one of the statements that I'll make in here, just so that nobody, is that the date is that copyright pending, because I would not want anybody to take your stories from you. And the date
alone
would be your evidence of nobody being able to take your stories away from you.
Okay, this is a story of how the turtle got his shell. Long ago, the turtle had no shell. He lived in the water and on the land just as he does today. When in the water, he moved very fast, and he enjoyed most of the time which he spent there, although the foods which he liked to eat were less plentiful in the water. Not only this, but the fish taunted him and laughed at him because of the way he looked. When on the land, the turtle moved very slowly, and he enjoyed most of the time that he spent there. The colors which he saw and the terrain over which he traveled, he found to be different and exciting. He especially enjoyed the variety and availability of foods, which were plentiful upon the land. Although because he moved so very slowly, the other animals could easily catch him and would eat him up. The turtle could find neither comfort nor safety in neither of the two worlds in which he lived. So the turtle wandered back and forth between the worlds of his existence, but remained always homeless. Nanobush, who traveled along the water's edge, saw the turtle a great deal. He noticed how the turtle was always so determined. Whenever the turtle was crossing the beach, whether it be toward a certain place on the land or finding its way into the water, he did so with great determination. Never would he be put off his path. Nanobush played a game with the turtle. He would catch him and move him away from where he had been headed. He'd often turn him around and head him in the opposite direction of where he had been going. The turtle would always find their path and continue on their way with complete disregard of the disturbance. Nanobush would laugh and laugh. It was great fun. One day, Nanobush thought he'd play a trick on the turtles. First of all, he made himself a huge basket. Then he went along the beach, filling his basket with the turtles. All the while Nanobush was gathering the turtles, a fox was watching him. The fox really liked to eat turtles. Not only were they easy to catch, but they were also very tasty. The fox was very sneaky. He was also a great thief. The fox could not resist the temptation of trying to steal some of the turtles from Nanobush, even though it would have been easier for him to find some for himself. So the fox stealthily followed Nanobush and waited for a chance to snatch some of the turtles. As Nanobush filled his basket, it became heavier and heavier. In fact, it became too heavy for Nanobush to carry to the top of a small mountain which was nearby, as he had planned to do. He needed another basket, but was unable to leave in order to get one because of the fox, which he knew had been following him. Nanobush knew that the fox would eat the turtles if given a chance to do so. On the beach, Nanobush found some stones which were hollow in the center and had holes in one end. He gathered all that he could find until there was not another stone like them anywhere on the beach. Nanobush stuffed the turtles into the stones which he had collected. He was quite sure that the turtle would be safe until he returned. Then he left to go and get himself another basket.
Stop for a second.
The turtles were very strong. They managed to push their legs out through the sides of the stones while Nanobush was gone. Because they were uncomfortable, they kicked holes through the back end of the stone so that they could stick their tails out. Then they stuck their heads out of the open end and each continued on its way, at their same slow pace, of course. The turtles soon found that they could still swim with the stones on. The added weight slowed them down a little, but not much. They decided that the stones which Nanobush had found made them very good homes. From then on, the turtles have always had a place in which they felt comfortable and safe. When Nanobush came back, he found the fox with his nose stuck in one of the stones. All of the other turtles were gone. Even the stones were gone. Nanobush was very angry because he thought that the fox had stolen the turtles. He grabbed a hold of the stone in which the fox had his nose stuck. Then he pulled it as hard as he could. This stretched the fox's nose When his nose was long and slender, the stone popped off. The fox ran away yelping. When Nanabush noticed some of the turtles crawling along the beach, stones and all, he laughed and laughed. Then he gathered two baskets full, carried them up to the top of a small mountain which was nearby. When he let them go, the turtles continued on their way, just as determined as ever. The next season, when the turtles were hatched, they had shells. Nanabush saw this and he laughed and laughed.
How many stories have you written?
I have five here. And this is the Pitrago for the how hunting came to the Indians. Cousin drew the other pictures for me.
You did the drawings.
Yeah, I did this drawing. Yeah. I didn't do the other ones. My cousin did them for me.
In your story writing, have you done any stories particularly for women or girls? Are you aware of any traditional stories that deal very much with women and girls?
I have one up here, but it isn't written yet. It has to do with vanity and love. What it isn't written yet. I think of them and I write them up here for quite a while before they ever get on tape.
I won't get you on tape if you take your microphone off.
Oh, I forgot that was on. I mostly do my writing during the winter. I don't like to stay in a house a lot, so during the summer I'm off and I'm gone, so I don't really do that much writing in the summertime. I hope to be going to some of the powwows this year.
What do you want for your children in the way of Indian culture? What do you want to pass on to them? What do you want to pass on to them?
Everything that I know, I'll try to pass on if they're interested in having it. And I'd like to encourage them to even go further and to learn more than what I know. I would really like it if one of them, or both of them, could learn to speak the Ojibwe language. That's one thing that I've always wanted to do, and I've never really taken the time to go out and learn that.
Maybe what we can do is stop there. Is there something else that you want to ask?
Do you feel that the future generations can benefit by what you do, and how you do it? Do you feel that they benefit by what you're doing?
I think so, because when I was younger, there wasn't that many people to ask, what is it to be an Indian? Can you show me how to do this? Would you teach me this? The next generation would be better off if myself and other people were there and willing to give them what they're looking for at that crucial stage in their development, where they're feeling anxiety and frustration at being an Indian. How do I fit in? Where do I see myself in this world with everything going on, and how am I important? And I think that knowledge would help them to feel more secure about themselves.
And how do you see what we're doing helping?
I think documentation will help, because then that information will be there for the ones that are out there looking. I know when I was younger, I would skip school and I'd go down to the Native Women's Workshop and I'd watch all their videos that they had there, because that's what I needed at the time.
Where did you go to school in London, just out of curiosity?
I went to HBBL Secondary School, and I would like to continue my education, but I'm just waiting for my children to get a little bit older.
That's all that is. She answered a lot of the questions before you
got it. Oh, I know. I didn't even need to ask her.